There's no distance too far for the perfect trip.
Hi, checking in for...
Or the perfect table.
Hey, where are you?
Coming!
And when you get access to Resi Priority Notify with your Amex Platinum card...
Hey, this looks amazing!
I'm so glad you made it.
And travel benefits at fine hotels and resorts booked through Amex Travel. It's worth the trip. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
The Mike Wise Show is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Mike Wise Show is hosted by a guy who played basketball atrociously for Hawaii Pacific College, which forced him into journalism. And, oh yeah, he wrote about basketball for the New York Times, the Washington Post, and ESPN. He's also a wise ass, and so are many of his guests. Right, Mike?
As always, thank you, Darlene. Last week on this show, my producer, Bruce Bernstein, and I went mano a mano on topics we don't normally handle, namely politics and the future of our country. We threw in a little NBA, but just enough to keep our jobs. This week, we welcome a former congressperson from California who's not only a sports fan, but has publicly admitted to buying Dodgers swag after they won the World Series. Welcome, Katie Hill.
Hello, thanks for having me.
What went into the fashion purchase? Was it just one of those things where you were actually a Dodgers fan?
Oh, yeah. No, I grew up a Dodgers fan forever. But I had my Dodgers swag, but then I needed to get the World Series champs swag. So
the real stuff.
Yeah. And my last shirt, I've worn it so much that it's got holes in it. So I figured I can retire that to a pajama shirt. And now I've got some new ones.
I think it's
but
cool.
Yeah, it was definitely like right after I got the MLB email saying like whatever percent off, and I was like, yeah, I'm a consumer, so I bought it.
My only real name drop in LA now is, well, Jeannie Buss, because she came on the program, the owner, a while ago. But when I was like 15, I was living in Hawaii, and I was a rickshaw driver, pedicab driver. I took Magic Johnson around for a week.
Oh, nice.
And it was like he was only 19. He'd just gotten out of school and he hadn't joined the Lakers. But like, I looked the other day, like Magic Johnson got a ring for the Dodgers because he owns part of them.
I forgot about that. That's right.
Yeah, isn't that wild?
Good for him.
Yeah. So let's talk, first of all, your podcast, Naked Politics. You've been doing that for how long now?
I guess about a month. That sounds right.
Are you enjoying it?
I am, yeah. I really
it's not like a pain in the neck like mine is every week. No, it's fine.
Well, no, I think it's just so casual, and we're still like finding our feet on everything that it's low pressure, I guess. And also, I don't have a contract with anyone. This is just me doing it for now. So,
sure.
I guess it just gives the freedom to sort of talk about whatever you want to talk about, and then kind of wing it. And the person, I have two people who help me with it, but they've worked with me on a million other things, so they just get me and where I want to go. So it's been pretty easy. And I just keep adding randomly episodes. I haven't gotten into like I'm like, I want to talk to this person. And then we just do an episode. So
yeah, those are the best kind. They feel more organic.
Definitely organic.
and it's not, I don't know, scripted, so to speak.
Yeah.
For my audience that doesn't know you as well as say if Shaq came on or somebody else, please tell people your Amazon best-selling book came out August 11th. Please feel free to promote it, because I think it will tell people a lot more than I could tell about you in many ways.
Well, so I guess I'll just do this how I was how I was doing it. I went on a road trip recently, and you know, out of context, I don't get recognized too often, especially when you're wearing masks and everything like that. And so I was in Montana, and somebody was introducing me to somebody. And then of course you get into oh, what do you do? And then I'm like, fuck, how do I answer that now? And so I was like, well, I do a podcast. And they're like, what's the podcast? And I'm like, oh, it's called Naked Politics. And oh, do you do anything else? I'm like, well, I wrote a book called She Will Rise. And they're like, what's it about? And I'm like, well, it's about me, I guess. And they're making a movie out of it. And the person's like, why would they do that? And I'm like, well, okay. So do you remember last year there was a politician who resigned because of naked photos? Yeah, that was me. So So I was, yeah, I was elected in 2018 to Congress as one of the youngest women ever elected. Flipped a seat, and at that point it was the last Republican seat in LA County. It's unfortunate.
And you took out your opponent had, that seat hadn't flipped in like 20 something years.
No, he was a two-termer, but before that it was held by the same Republican for decades. And in its current form had never been held by a Democrat. And but we won it by like 8 points or almost nine points. So it was a huge victory.
And anybody that doesn't know that area of California, I had an uncle down there. I mean, you have progressive California, and then that's like a bastion of really rigid conservative people they're just not as progressive as many people there.
No. Yeah, it's, you know, the district has Simi Valley in it, which a lot of people, you know, kind of know about Simi Valley. It's got the Reagan Library there. Yeah. It's got the Antelope Valley, which has a long history of, you know, pretty racist and very conservative stuff, like the whole anti-gay marriage thing in California, Prop 8 started in the Antelope Valley with the state legislator there, who was the dad of the guy who I ended up beating. It's a very purple district. Tons and tons of cops live there, firefighters, nurses, teachers, very working class. It's like the suburb of LA, but it's growing. And, you know, it was this really big victory. It felt like the district was changing enough that, you know, when I ultimately decided to resign, which was a really tough decision, that it would be able to stay in Democratic hands. But it didn't. And that was a big surprise. And now we're still waiting. It didn't for the special election. Now we're waiting for the results of the, this most recent one. And it's dead. It's so close. It's within a couple hundred votes. So we'll see what happens.
But party kicks yourself with the Senate being so close and everything else that it would have been, I don't know.
Yeah, no, it's definitely been stuff to have to reconcile in terms of, did I do the right thing? And, you know, I at the time it felt like the right thing. And, I know that it was the right thing for me personally, but I don't, you know, it's not the ultimate outcome that I would have liked. I would have felt a lot better if it stayed blue. So
you did the reverse Ginsburg. That's what I'm calling it. You got out early. She got out early.
I guess.
It's a really bad analogy.
That's okay. I mean, during all the Ginsburg stuff, I kept equating it to like, why didn't we do the weekend at Bernie's thing? So, you know, I'm all
right.
I'm with you with the not.
Yeah. No, yeah. Well, I just see a marketing boom right now. The notorious Katie.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Yeah. That'd be tremendous.
There you go.
One thing I feel like even though I knew your story a little bit, I feel like I've gotten to know you a little bit on social media, even peripherally. Uh-huh. You're where I am. You're like, what the fuck is going on with our country?
Yeah.
Look, I could talk to you about everything, NBA social justice initiatives, all the things that I'd like to at some point. But I really want to get the crux of where you are on. I mean, my take is simply, we can have red and blue, we can have liberal and progressive, we can have Democrat and Republican, and that there are good people on both sides. I think that we have to deal with that. But I feel like this is like truth-telling America versus alternative reality America. And if you're on the wrong side of that one, you're like, you're gone. Like,
how do you even reconcile
that?
No, I know. It's so bizarre. And, you know, my dad's a Republican. He's always been a Republican.
Yep.
I'm the first Democrat he ever voted for. He ultimately just didn't vote in the presidential this time because he's like, I'm not going to vote for Donald Trump, but I don't want to vote for Biden. So, you know, he's also like, well, it's over. He won. You know what I mean? And I think Biden won. And I think that it's just this like cult of personality and lying and, you know, manipulation of people that Trump and all of his, you know, supporters up high have kept going with for the last, beyond 4 years. I guess it's probably closer to 6 years now. And it's just, it's been made possible because the media allows it to happen. And you know, I don't know what the way out is until we start kind of actually living in the same reality, all of us.
Well, it's like I see encouraging signs sometimes when, like, Neil Cavuto on Fox News basically he just cuts away from Kayleigh McEnany's press conference. He's like, I can't in good conscience put this on the air. She doesn't have any evidence of wrongdoing.
Yeah.
And now, you know, God bless some of my colleagues in the media. They've actually gotten to the point where they've ferreted out every possible complaint, legality, and they're finding out there's no fraud. Or recently there was a person in Philadelphia that came forward and said, yeah, I just made the thing up. And so this just, to me, it's so obvious. And yet this person in the White House, Donald Trump, like, I can't imagine this. I guess politically, this is what I would ask you. If you're in their shoes, whoever it is, Lindsey Graham, Ted Cruz, somebody that feels that they might be scarred by Donald Trump if they don't have his back in this issue or something. I don't get, like, in my book, I would, if you walk away from him now, you almost can save face and maybe get another job in the GOP political machine if you're an aide or a thing. I don't get why you would be so loyal to an absolute nut.
Well, the problem is he has fierce, loyal followers that have now become the majority of what is currently the GOP. So, you know, people who are going to show up and vote for you in a primary are going to be people who support him and his ideology. And, well, ideology as far as we can call it that. So, you know, I think it's Lindsey Graham won because of Donald Trump. Mitch McConnell won because of Donald Trump and, you know, the enthusiasm that he generated. And they don't want to be, you know, ahead of alienating his supporters. They both, just using those two as examples, like, they're opportunists completely. And, you know, they know power and they're doing whatever they, I mean, Lindsey Graham, he hated Trump. Mitch McConnell hated Trump. And then, you know, they become his best friends, for political convenience. And I'm quite sure once things settle down and once Biden is in office, then suddenly you're going to see Lindsey Graham become quite this, like, bipartisan, you know, doing stuff with Joe, getting
right, playing both sides of the fence type stuff. Yep.
Either that or they go all in on the reverse and decide to be complete obstructionists like they were with Obama.
Yeah.
That's possible. The more that these flames are stoked, the more that this narrative is allowed to kind of prevail and extend it, you know, that delegitimizes the election, I think the worse it's going to be. So I really, really hope that you know, the right now there have been, I think, a dozen cases that Trump and his allies have filed, and all of them have been defeated in court already. So, you know, there are other pending ones, and I think that, I just hope that they play out quickly, that we do a recount quickly in whatever states need to, and just freaking move on as a country. We need to be able to move on. And if that means that Trump's new role is still going to be as kind of a figurehead for the Republican Party, then they're going to have to figure that out. So
if you're, what does your gut say how long this thing goes on where there's no real moment where Trump says, Biden's the president.
I think he's going to try and push it out as far as possible. And honestly,
really?
I wouldn't be surprised if he tries to do something like change the date of the, you know, inauguration, because he's, and that's not within his power, but doesn't mean he's not going to try.
Yeah.
He has all kinds of things that's not within his power. And, you know, that I think that he'll make the case that there's, when I say he, let's be real, it's not just him. It's so many other people.
Yeah.
But who make the case for how there's still something outstanding, or we still don't have such and such resolved. And, you know, if you remember, he claimed voter fraud in the last election in 2016, even though he won, because he didn't like that he didn't win the popular vote.
Right.
Well, that committee that they started, or that commission that they started to investigate voter fraud, it met twice and it found nothing. And it, like, even his own people couldn't find anything because it's so rare. And, you know, it's also bizarre because obviously if Democrats were rigging the election somehow, then we would have kept all those House seats and we certainly would have flipped the Senate. So the same votes that you don't like that are, you know, making Joe Biden win are the same votes that also made Republicans win. So it's a strange, hypocritical movement. And I don't see him conceding before the end of the year. And even when he, if and when he does like concede, it's going to be how it was unfair and how he was cheated and da 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 da. And, you know, that has big ramifications and consequences for how people look at elections moving forward. And
that's the thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's me where I just look at it and I go, this is, I mean, treason might be strong, but the whole notion of calling into question the purest form of American democracy, the will of the people, the election, I don't know how you get away with that. I just don't. It's sort of like you can do a lot of bad things in life, including, you know, government-sponsored childhood abandonment at the border and all the awful things that his administration has been a part of. This one is just like saying, screw, fuck you, American people. We don't really care. I'm going to do things the way I want to do
it. Yeah, I mean, it's the exact behavior that we see from dictators. And, you know, you've even seen him firing top defense officials right now. And you can't help but look at it as like, oh, my God, if this guy is left unchecked, then he's plotting a coup, you know? Right. And so I think that it's going to be a real test of, you know, America as we move into this, because there's never been a situation like this where there's a refusal to transition power in a legitimate election. And I think it just sucks for so many people who were like, okay, at least at the end of the election, we'll be able to put it behind us, whatever it is. And it's just like, we're in this endless period of, I mean, we know the result, we know the winner, we know what's ultimately going to happen. But how ugly is it going to have to get before that does happen?
Yeah, I'm with you. I'd be remiss today if we're taping this on Veterans Day, and I know you have a long history in your family. If you don't mind, could you share the story of your brother? I think it really will make people stop and think today and tell people a little bit more about you.
Yeah. So I resigned at the end of October of 2019, and I thought it was like the darkest time I could experience, right?
Yeah.
I was super depressed. I was suicidal. I like felt like, you know, I didn't know what everything meant. I was, you know, anyway, the darkest moment was not then. It came a couple of months later when my mom had to have brain surgery. And so my brother came back. He was in the Navy. He was at Great Lakes. And he had to come back, or not had to, but he came back for the surgery. And while he was home, he overdosed and he died of, he did cocaine and he died of a fentanyl overdose, because that's what was what it was laced with. And I was the one who found him. It was the day after my mom's surgery. I did CPR on him. It was absolutely horrible. He was 20 years old. He'd had problems with drugs when he was younger, but he'd cleaned up. He'd gone to, you know, gone to rehab, like serious, you know, rehab. And, you know, it was really important for him to join the Navy and to be able to turn his life around. And then I think with the stress and of, you know, what was happening with my mom and what was happening with me, and it all just kind of culminated and he relapsed in tragedy. And, you know, he and I were super, super close. Mm-hmm. But yeah, figuring out how to kind of, I don't know, how to, take that and make meaning of it and do something that feels like you're valuing his life and legacy, is something that I think all of us are still trying to wrap our heads around in terms of my family.
It's just brutal. People always put people in boxes and they love to label them. And I think that, like, that was just when I saw that, it was crushing on many levels. I got talked into doing this 22 push-ups a day for 22 straight days thing recently. And I always hate these challenges. They're kind of vanity things where, like, you got to film yourself on Facebook. But right. I'm like, okay, cool. You know, I'm getting older. I could do 22.
Might as well.
but like what it was for was for the 22 symbol was the 22 combat vets per day on average commit suicide a day. Mm-hmm. 22. Yeah. And I'm like, you know, and I don't know. I just... But tell people your brother's name so we don't.
Yeah,
so.
Danny Bennett.
Danny Bennett, yeah, okay.
And he, I mean, he was trying for the SEALs and just like, it was just, you know, such, I hate when people say it's wasted life or wasted potential because I can't think about it that way, but like there was, it's hard to sort of, you know, reconcile the future that he could have had. Mm-hmm. So,
and it makes your situation almost at that point almost feel like nothing.
Oh yeah,
your brother dies. Yeah,
and put it completely into perspective. Like that's not what matters.
You obviously detailed your own personal meltdown. I don't even know if I would call it a meltdown in some ways because I think we all we go through life, we make mistakes. God forbid, like I think I got my job at the New York Times when I was 30. I was a hayseed from Sacramento. I didn't know what I was doing. Like, God forbid if I had in like, this is like mid-90s, if I had the exposure and everything you did at that, like people were writing about me at that, I would have just been, it would have been so, not just invasive, but I would have felt like my life isn't my life. It's everybody else's life now. And mm-hmm. and I got to think when, you know, I don't know the guy, but when your ex-husband, you know, like, you know, sends pictures out over the internet, just does the most awful thing possible to invade your own sanctity and every little detail of your private life, real or imagined is unearthed. That's awful. I can't even imagine.
Yeah, no, and I've had, you know, so many women and even men who have been victims of cyber exploitation that have talked to me since then and just said that, you know, you talking about it and you kind of continuing to show up and try to take ownership of it. You know, I mean, the fact that my podcast is called Naked Politics is an attempt to kind of take that back, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I've talked about this a lot, but I was in an abusive marriage and I left and he said that I left about 6 months into my congressional career. I tried to leave before, but it was before the election. And he said that if I left, he'd ruin me. And then finally it was just enough that I knew I had to actually leave. And I, like my dad, the police officer came with me to make sure that I was safe. And you know, he was incredibly volatile and so, you know, sure enough, like I felt like I was kind of in the clear for a few months and I had this like respite where I felt, you know, huge relief and happiness. And I was able to totally, you know, commit myself to the work and everything like that. And then it just came down like a hammer when, you know, the pictures came out and we found out that he basically had shopped them around to, you know, to the Republican operatives in my district who were looking for a way to take me out. And you know, this was, I had started dating him when I was 16 years old. And so there's just this like level of trust and invasion. And I think there really is, even if you're confident and you know, I'm all about being body positive and everything like that. Mm-hmm. Even when you have that, like your pictures being out there were not for anyone else. In my case, they were even pictures that I didn't know he'd taken. Mm-hmm. And they're certainly not they were ones that were designed to not only, you know, humiliate you in terms of whatever the scandal piece was, but also like, they weren't good pictures. Like I know I can be pretty good looking and those were not the good pictures. So, you know, I think it's
this wasn't your airbrushed Playboy shoot.
No,
you're right.
Although funny enough that I had an article in Playboy about me, a feature in Playboy that came out the next right afterwards. And you know, I wasn't naked for those, but in hindsight, I kind of wish like, man, I should have just gone all in.
Right. Right. You know, all of a sudden this is what it really looks like, kid.
Yeah.
All right. So I salute your openness to, you still identify as bisexual, mm-hmm. correct?
Yep.
you know, I can't imagine, like, just that known alone. I have a nephew who's trans and just a great guy. And he was Amelia. Now he's Marcus. Yeah. And he's like, do you accept? I'm like, we love you. You can call yourself anything but Trump, and we love you. Okay.
There you go.
So like, it doesn't matter. And I feel like I don't want to go too much into it, because you've been in Washington and you've been in bigger rooms than I have. And I know that there's some weird thing where Democrats and Republicans get together for a party sometimes, and you go, wait a minute, I thought you guys hate each other. But I feel like Biden, like, he gets the LGBTQ thing. I think he gets it, and he understands it. And irrespective of whatever his Catholic beliefs are or not, he's very clear about, you know, it's okay to love who you know, love is love. And I think that's big.
And I love how he, you know, he has his Catholic faith, and I think he's clearly self-studied a lot around the scripture and his religion and everything. Mm-hmm. And I think I really respect how, you know, it's not, it shows that religion doesn't have to be hateful, right? And that there's a space for, you know, tolerance and acceptance and love, and that's in fact the best thing that you can do. So.
Yeah, this is one of those podcasts where we're, you know, if it were really great, we would just be going at each other the whole time, and we get great downloads. Mm-hmm. I just agree with everything you said, and that's why I had you on.
Oh, well, there we go.
But Laura Ingraham on Fox famously said, shut up and dribble to LeBron James, because they're, and we've met, part of this show has really been about the social justice movement, and really the modern social justice movement of athletes, and LeBron James is sort of at the forefront of it. And of course, I'm just wondering, like, your thoughts when you watch sports, or you enjoy them. To me, like, I think it's great that these guys are using their platform to speak out, but some people don't feel that way.
I think that first and foremost, everybody is a person, you know, their occupation is secondary. Mm-hmm. And for athletes, they have a professional occupation, but they are allowed to be who they are independent of that. And that means, you know, you build up a platform, you build up a following, and people who admire and respect you and watch you because of that. And you get to say what you want to say. If they don't like it, they can still respect the game you play and value you as a player, but they don't have to, you know, they don't have to like your beliefs. It doesn't matter. It's not up to them. You know, I think about Tom Brady, right? We can all respect how he plays, and yet he's pro Trump. He talks about being pro Trump. And
is he still?
I
thought Giselle got to him, but maybe you're right. Maybe
I don't know. I haven't seen any updates. I just kind of.
Bruce, you're a New Englander. Do you know anything about Tom Brady and whether or not he's still pro Trump?
I haven't heard anything about him talking politics lately, because now he plays for Tampa Bay, so I don't hang on every word like I used to, where I thought he was a god. Now he's.
But he's a Florida voter. That's big next election. He's a Florida voter. God, what a.
That's a good thing for them too.
We were thinking the other day. We were talking about how one of the big things in sports now is. Involves transgender athletes competing against cisgendered athletes. And is it, when we were asking, is it fair for someone who began life in a male body to compete against females? And I don't know if I've come around to my answer on that. I wonder what you thought.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's tricky. I actually gave a speech when we were passing the Equality Act in Congress, and this was June, I think, of maybe May of 2019. And it was, you know, the reasoning that the Republicans gave for not wanting to pass it was the whole idea of transgender people competing in sports. And it was just such an absurd, I mean, we're talking about basic rights, you know, in terms of the Equality Act and providing basic civil protections, had nothing to do with people being transgendered and playing sports. And that's that's policy that's set. I think that it's up to each individual sport to figure out what needs to happen to account for, you know, biological differences. But, you know, I'm very mixed on it too, because you know, there's not an easy answer, right? Like men and women, there are women who have that are competitive in sports who have always, you know, been the female sex and are still higher testosterone and bigger and everything like that than, you know, some people who have transitioned. And so, but the human biology is very complicated, and it's as we try to kind of figure this out, I think that it's going to be incumbent on the professions and the, you know, at the collegiate level, high school and beyond, to figure out what makes sense within their bounds to make it fair. Certainly not a government role.
I'm with you. Couple things before I let you go. I don't know if you're involved in the homeless like you used to be, but I want to say you were the former executive director of People Assisting the Homeless in the statewide nonprofit organization working to end homelessness throughout California. Is that right?
Yes. It was that. I did that for almost 10 years.
Yeah, PATH. Yep. And so I've been really involved in the homeless in D.C., especially the K Street underpass people.
Oh, yeah.
And I just feel like there's so... Oh man, I don't know what to say. I guess I would say that while Muriel Bowser talks a good game, I feel like there's this harassment going on, and especially during COVID, like the notion that they're going down there and steam blowing the streets and making these guys move their tents, and if they're not there, they take all their belongings. Just so many things I don't even call them homeless. I just call them people experiencing homelessness because it's,
we do that too. I mean, it's the,
because you get to know them and they're people and they're just like, you know, all of us in life are, you know, a couple bad decisions away from that
or tragedies, right? Like,
right.
It's in many cases, it's not even bad decisions. And like we very intentionally changed our language and talked about it that way too.
Right.
It's not homeless people, it's people experiencing homelessness, and that matters because, you know, you don't say it's a cancer person, it's somebody who has cancer or has had cancer or is a survivor.
Yeah.
And you know, I think that it's an important way for us to frame it so that we recognize that they are people and they're not just this label. And one of the most impactful things that someone ever said to me when I was, you know, in the field on working on the issue is that you'd do outreach, you'd shake their hands. And some people who worked in it would like, you know, wouldn't shake people's hands or would immediately hand sanitize, like even in front of them. And I just remember this was like right when I'd started, I shook a guy's hand and he just said, he started crying and he's like, just thank you for seeing me as a person. And I don't remember the last time someone shook my hand. And, you know, it's tragic. It's really hard. I mean, you have people who in DC constantly, in LA too, who are, you know, on the side of the roads asking for money and panhandling. And I have mixed feelings about that too. But I also feel the pull to like, just, I don't even care if you go buy a beer with it. I would want to buy a beer with it too, if it were me.
You know, this is interesting because a guy that his name's Aaron Souza, he's like getting his PhD at American University. He helped me down there when I was doing some homeless stories for CBS in DC. And he basically said like, I don't give people that are homeless money because I think that they're, you know, might use for drugs. And he goes, you know, you can say that, but because one of the biggest things with people down there that I get, like if I give them a dollar, they love that I do that because it gives them the choice of what to do with it. It's sort of like almost a sort of, well, you trust me enough to use this for food or water. And it's, he said, it's, and I don't go down there and give them big butt, but now if I got a few dollars and I don't have like extra, you know, leftover pizza, I'll give them a dollar, you know, if they need it. Cause it's like, you know, what you do with this is up to you. It's like, what?
Yeah, I'm choosing.
Who am I to say that I should judge every second of your life?
Right. Yeah. No. People who didn't have mental health issues before becoming homeless, or who didn't have addiction problems before becoming homeless, like the chances of developing it while you live on the streets are so high because of, you know, the trauma of living on the streets. And so I've kind of, you know, earlier on, the philosophy at PATH was like, you don't want to, you want to make it, you want to give people incentives to come inside and to get shelter and help and move into housing. And I still agree with that to a certain extent, but there's just no, to me, there's no real positive in passing judgment. And it's just like, yeah, I don't care. If I'm choosing to give you $2 or $3 or $5, you get to do with it what you want.
I just like humanizing these people, like showing who they are. Like, oh yeah, you could do stories on these people and then at the end of it and say, oh yeah, they happen to live here. And you would go, whoa, what an amazing life. When we get down, I'm going to send you a couple stories I did.
Yeah,
I bet you we can collaborate on to think about something, because I think you have so much expertise in that area. I know it's still near and dear to your heart.
Oh, very much so. It's so pervasive. It's everywhere. It's getting worse. And it boils down to income inequality and a lack of affordable housing, and that you can't build your way out of it because it's just too expensive. And our safety net is not there. I mean, you know, one of the more common groups that we had that became homeless were people who were living off of Social Security. They were older, and they, you know, got priced out of their rent, and they just had nothing else. And, you know, you get maybe $1,000 for Social Security for some of them, and maybe 1500, 2000. And they can't live off of that in places like LA or here. And, you know, so there's different levels. There's different types of homelessness. There's chronic homelessness. There's, you know, people who might be just need a little bit of help because they're in the additional phase. But yeah, it's really tough, and it needs major investment. And I'm hopeful that, you know, I'm hopeful that a Biden administration will do much better than a Trump.
Care more about that.
It's just a matter of the resources.
Yeah, I think so. I hope so. One of the guys we interviewed down there, he was Anthony Solomon's name. He had a job at the VA. He was doing custodial work, but he worked full time. And I said, how can you live in a tent? And he goes, well, one, DC's, you know, and I go, well, how much do you make? And he goes, about 30,000, you know, a little over 30,000. He said, well, and I go, why don't you get a housing voucher? And he goes, if you make over 30,000, you can't get a housing voucher. They're basically telling him not to work.
Too. I mean, it's impossible to even get on a wait list for, you know, many major cities and communities have had the wait lists shut down for years because there's just no more room on them.
Yeah. All right. Lightning round very quickly here. You could use one word, one sentence to describe someone. I'm trying to think. Mitch McConnell.
Turtle. He's kind of more like an evil mastermind that looks like a turtle.
Yeah, but he looks like he's gonna go back into his shell. You're right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let's go with Kamala Harris. Madam Vice President elect.
Yes.
I love that. Do you know her?
Yeah. I was actually one of the first people who endorsed her for her initial presidential run.
She's good. She's good people, right? From what you know.
People. She's really good people. And, you know, she's going to work her butt off. Like, yeah, that much for sure. She's smart. And I think she's going to have she's going to be a critical asset in the Biden administration.
Let's see. I'm going to go with Lindsey Graham.
Ugh. Just a slimy motherfucker. Like, that's the only thing that I can.
That's perfect. Right. No, he's just like one of these guys who he'd be talking to you and he'd take your wallet while he was trying to smooth talk. He's just an awful person.
Yeah. And just just has no shame completely turning around what he'd said before and just being like,
yeah. So. No, you're right. If Politico or Roll Call did a body issue, a la ESPN, the body issue, would you be a candidate?
Wait, is that where they do the like the shots?
Yeah, like they put you in really, you're naked, but you're like sort of like, I always cover up the private parts, but it's like really like looks, you know, you either look strong or whatever you are, you know, natural.
If I were asked and I had enough time to like get in shape, then yes.
Yeah. Well, I've already signed on to the dad bod issue.
There you go. There you
it's
go.
It's incredible. It won't sell, but I guess my last one, Katie Hill, post post-resignation versus Katie Hill versus pre-resignation, all the things, what would that person tell, what would the person in the future tell the person in the past if they had to tell them one thing?
You're resilient, you know, because I wouldn't want to forewarn, because I feel like everything I did before I needed to do, and I wouldn't have wanted to scare myself off. So, you know, just that I guess saying some shit's going to come your way, but you can handle it.
So. I like that. Some shit's going to come your way. Yeah. Well, this has been great. It's something different we haven't done before. We've had different guests on that talked about different things, but this is awesome.
Yeah, and, thank you.
And thanks for coming on. And yeah, really, I'll think of your brother Danny Bennett today and make sure that I think that's a, you know, you pay tribute to him in great ways every day.
Thank you.
That was dope.
Thanks to our guest, former member of Congress from California, Katie Hill, who does own Dodgers swag. Thanks to my producer, Bruce Bernstein, and our editor, Tom Phillip. Please listen to all of our Pure Hoops media shows. Full Court Press has the best in college basketball with a new show every Tuesday. Catch and Shoot 2.0 is here every Wednesday with great guests and discussions. And Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with Monica and King is here every Thursday. BJ and Eric have the Pure Hoops podcast each Friday, and I'm back with the Mike Wise Show every Monday. Please wear your mask in public and do not rush the field if your football team wins a game, you knucklehead Notre Dame people. And don't be complacent. COVID is still killing people. Until next week, stay safe, everybody. Aloha.
The Mike Wise Show used to be called The Wise Ass Show, but it remains a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.